As we record this, minutes after the European Championship semi-final, all I get to say right now is Hamilton 2, Verstappen 0. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Please don't leave in a hurry, Dutch fans. I know you're out there. I love you guys, really, honestly. But what I will say is the beatings will continue until morale improves. Ask Luke Littler. Anyway, welcome to episode 530 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us as ever on the show. And yeah, we've got another double header episodes this week. Just a quick clarification on something. We did watch MotoGP in Germany this past weekend, but because of MotoGP summer break, we thought we'd kick it to next week. We don't like doing triple stacking recordings. We get tired. We're podcasters too, you know?
Yeah, especially when we're going like late, like almost past midnight British time.
I know, it's a struggle, but someone's got to do it. I'm Dre Harrison, as you can probably guess already, hosting the show as ever. And joining me, as you probably already guessed by now as well, is RJ O'Connell. How's it going, big man?
It's July 10th, 2024. We're recording this minutes after England advanced to the semifinals. No idea what they're going to do in the semifinals. So now they're going to the finals. No idea what they're going to do there. And a lot of people are happy in America, too, because Greg Berhalter's gone.
Football win.
Now, I know. I think there is a coach that the U.S. can get. Expected to come out of contract as a pedigree of winning matches. Just got a big one in Germany just about minutes ago.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Yes, of course. I'm of course thinking Didier Deschamps to the U.S.
They're keeping him.
Oh man, no! I just think it would be so funny if our big play to like we're restore faith in U.S. men's soccer. We're getting Gareth Southgate. That's a big name.
All of a sudden, by making the final, I'm not so sure he's going to be so readily available now. It's weird how shit turns out here, but here we go.
It is weird how things turn out. But then again, going into this weekend, would you have ever imagined Lewis Hamilton was going to win at least one more on the way out of Mercedes?
I'm going to be real with you. I wasn't sure. A part of me was genuinely starting to think that this day might not ever happen again. It's not like Mercs have been completely winless in the last couple of years. Of course, George Russell has had two of them. But I would never have guessed that as a direct result of all this, Hamilton would get one more on the way out. And not even really via any shenanigans or an act of God or anything like that. He earned this win on merit. This was a hard-earned, didn't need a safety car, didn't need a strategic masterstroke. This was, even despite the rain, a pretty... I wouldn't say conventional, but there was no major shenanigans in this race, and yet Hamilton found a way to win.
The stroke he probably had strategically was just to trust the strategy he was given.
It's amazing how these things turn out. We'll get into a lot of detail as to break down Lewis Hamilton's 104th Grand Prix win in a very, very short while. We'll also talk about the McLaren garage, who, well, if you believe Lando Norris, who, to be fair, is his own biggest critic, was very down on his team again, saying we threw it away on the final stop. We'll have a breakdown on McLaren situation as well. And there's a bunch of other little stories that we've got to clean up as well. Sergio Perez, Ollie Bearman, the F1 movie is coming soon, and flowers for Nico Hülkenberg. All of that in the next hour or so. But in the meantime, here's the places you can find us. We are on youtube.com/ Motorsport101. You can listen to us there as well. We're on Audio Boom. Of course, that's our host site now. But of course, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much everywhere are all good podcasts are available. You can check us out on our website, motorsport101.com, if you want to get some extra bonus written thoughts from yours truly on on all of the triple header this past weekend, whether that be Formula One in the British Grand Prix, IndyCar's hybrid debut in Mid-Ohio this past weekend, and MotoGP's German Grand Prix, where Jorge Martin got another bad case of the bozo gene. All of that broken down over the next week or so on the podcast as well. Also, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content, as well as if you back us at the $10 level, you can also get listen to the Supporters Club, where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Ghost Raptor did this past week, who actually upgraded his pledge to $10. Thanks, buddy. Much appreciated. Thank you for backing us at that level. Much appreciated. We love that. We love to hear that, as always. Thank you very much. And yeah, shout out to you. So yeah, hope you guys enjoy the show. And right after this, we'll talk about the 2024 British Grand Prix.
...945 days since his last win in Saudi Arabia in 2021, Lewis Hamilton. At long last, we never thought we'd see the day, at least not in Mercedes silver and black. He took his 104th Formula One Grand Prix win in stunning fashion. He took advantage of a George Russell mistake and a George Russell retirement, where the rain came down early in Silverstone, as Zeph Russell would eventually retire. And after holding off Lando Norris in the rain as the track tied up, some superb tire management from Hamilton at the end allowed him to hold Norris off, as well as Max Verstappen chasing down at the end to win by just 1.5 seconds easily. One of the most popular victories in modern Formula One history?
I can't be the only one who was sitting there thinking this might not happen again with Lewis, given, like I said before, the good fortune to a degree of George Russell, the general state of competitiveness, the state of the field. Red Bull has been the dominant force in F1 for the last year and a half or so. McLaren has really become the number one contender in the last half dozen races.
Mercedes
or so
has not been the number one Mercedes power team in Formula One as of recently. Like, Mercedes has had a little bit of an upswing, but you've seen it through parts of last year, and you've seen it through this season, too. Russell has been the guy leading the charge for Mercedes. And you just think, with Hamilton already with the Ferrari contract signed, and boy, he's got to be thinking like, right, Ferrari, you got to get this development path back on track. I made a big commitment to y'all to make this big change at the end of my career. But you just think, this is more of a celebration of all the good times, but it's never going to amount to anything more than that. Certainly not another home win. Not Lewis embracing his father in tears, in part firmly after the victory. Everybody loves this.
It's all the casual channel hopper F1 fans, the lowest common denominators, all coming out of the woodwork, not thinking this day would come. You know, Hamilton was like sharing a bunch of posts from celebrities on his Instagram page that were giving him props for the win. Saw Serena Williams in there, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes. Like, this was like the big, this was the big homecoming. Because I know a lot of people hopped on the F1 wagon when Hamilton was doing the dominating up until the end of 2020, 2021, if you want to include the fact he still won 9 Grand Prix that season, and depending on who you ask, should have won that world championship. But this was the coming out party. This was the we're so fucking back party right here. And look, please, if you're a Max Verstappen fan, forgive me for what I'm about to say, but Verstappen doesn't move the needle like this man does. There's no getting around it. This was the ultimate feel-good vibes win. It was a feel-good weekend for British sport. We had the penalty shootout in the European Championship quarterfinals take place after qualifying, and there was thousands of people at the stage. Hamilton and Russell were on that stage watching that shootout against Switzerland, and England won. Huge cheer. I know there was a bunch of people that were not there for Hamilton specifically. I saw a lot of papaya in the stands, naturally, Fernando Norris. And
this is a British 1-2-3 on the grid in qualifying.
Yeah.
Russell on pole, Hamilton second, Norris third. You're thinking, you got a good chance for a hometown winner either way.
First time it was a British 1-2-3 in qualifying in F1 since 1958. This was as big a we want the hometown winner win we've ever seen in F1. And we got one, and arguably the biggest one of the three in doing so. So like I said, like, sorry, Max, we don't love you like that, because Lewis is still him, and that is the biggest needle mover this sport has gotten. Also, the sixth different winner of this season in only 12 rounds.
We were so down on the prospect of competitive parity in Formula One since last year.
We came into this season massively pessimistic, and who can blame us given how 2023 went? We saw one man win 17 Grand Prix and four sprints in a season. I can't blame everybody for being down on it. And it turns out the field caught up quicker than we thought. And now we've got three teams genuinely in the running.
And none of them are Ferrari.
Yeah, and Ferrari's dropped off the wagon. We'll get into a little bit of that in a minute. But it was... You know what it is? Like, my colleague Jake Boxall-Legg did the driver ratings for Autosport this weekend, and he summed it up better than I ever could. Hamilton won this race by getting the basics right. It really was a matter of don't over-egg the pudding, don't overthink it, get the basics right. Drive well, drive hard, take advantage of other people's mistakes like George Russell did when the rain first came down.
Yeah, coming at lap 18, it started bucketing it down. Russell makes a bit of a mistake. It allows Hamilton to close up in the DRS range and make the move down the hangar straight.
Yeah, Hamilton takes the lead. Well, the rain comes down. He gets the timing right to go to intermediates. He's able to hold off Lando Norris's McLaren. Like Hamilton's just a better wet weather driver than Lando Norris is at this point in his career. There's no getting around that. You can look at the telemetry. Norris didn't have an answer for him in wet conditions. He gets to switch back to dries at the right time, and he manages his soft set of tires far better than Lando can, and that's what enabled him to hold off Verstappen, who had been nowhere for three quarters of this race. Verstappen looked genuinely strugglicious out there, but again, because Red Bull's pit wall got their strategic timing right, again, shout out to Hannah Schmitz, was excellent on the wall where she needed to be for Max. The timed the undercut to go back onto dries perfectly, got back into play, and was on the second best tire, a brand new set of hards. He was able to cane them, and he got back into a race he was probably going to finish fifth or sixth in. He ends up finishing second, and that's the sort of days that win you championships. You don't win them on your good days, you win them on your bad ones. And this was a bad day for Max, and he came home in second and extended his championship lead because he passed Lando on the way to do it. We're halfway through the year, Max still has an 84-point lead, and people still think this is a title fight. I think that's adorable right now. Man's got three Grand Prix in hand.
We got to hold out hope for something. Also, Alex Jakes hit it out of the park to close a race again.
He's so good at that.
Don't call it a comeback, because he's been here for years.
He's so good at this. Like, I don't know why some people don't like Alex Jakes as a commentator. I think he's the best in the business right now, play-by-play, as a lead commentator in motorsport. I think he's fantastic. He's got the same calling the big moments right like Crofty does, but the added charisma, the added monologue that we get at the end sometimes, the passion that he puts into it is so good. And I've often said that as a commentator, you are the soundtrack to the fight. That's what you are often. And he's so good at characterizing people's feelings when the big moment comes. If you haven't listened to the way he closed out Monaco earlier this year when Charles Leclerc won, it's beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. And I'm not just saying this because we genuinely follow each other on Twitter. Alex Jakes is the best in the business. And he called that one perfectly. Shout out to Ben Edwards. He did a very good job on F1 TV as well. He stood in this week because Jakes did Channel 4's coverage this week, because this is the one free-to-air race that Channel 4 gives us. Thanks, Channel 4. We appreciate you. But yeah. Just a magical call, and just a fantastic performance by Lewis. Just did not put a foot wrong in a race where it was very, very easy to put a foot wrong.
Oh, yeah. Greasy and grimy in those middle stages of the race. And for a while, I mean, we talked about when Russell, when Hamilton took the lead from Russell. Shortly after that, both cars go off at the first corner, and that opens the door for McLaren to take prime advantage and eventually move into a 1-2 position. You think, well, surely they've got this one in the back, right? And it doesn't work out like that, because this may have been another case of McLaren fumbling the bag or relearning on the fly how to win races, because Oscar Piastri was capped out an extra lap when the rain landed and lost 17 seconds of doing so because his McLaren refused to double tap the stars, stack the cars, and then on the final pit stop, they leave Lando out an extra lap, and then he overshoots his bots, and that lost him track position over Hamilton. So, Trey, are we right to be this harsh on McLaren for copping up this many opportunities? Because, again, they're kind of relearning how to win.
Well, that's the problem. It all comes down to perception here. If you're perceiving McLaren as this punchy underdog that is trying to give Red Bull a bloody nose, and I guess you could probably be a bit more forgiving about this. Me personally, I'm evaluating McLaren in the context of you're competing for a championship. Both championships, especially the constructors, given the state of play. And we'll talk more a little bit about that in a minute. But for me, I think McLaren could have won 6 out of the last 7, and they've got one win to show for it in that time span. They've made little execution errors here and there for a good half dozen rounds now. Imola was the one where you probably go, well, Max was just a little bit better on the day. Fair enough. Yeah, that's the one where you go, McLaren didn't really do anything wrong. They just ran out of time, and that's just one of them ones where you just go, Austria, okay, Max took Lando out. That was over the line. Lando was unlucky. His car was too damaged to finish.
Oh, by the way, when they when they encountered each other with 5 laps to go, there was no fuss. I think Lando knew at that time he didn't have a defense.
Yeah,
no risk trying to drive like a hothead.
Same as Max when Lando passed him in the first phase of the race. The people, I think a lot of journos had to slowly close their MacBook screens when the two overtakes between them during this race were completely clean and fine. It's almost like these guys know how to play the percentages. But, you know, you got that. I think
they don't do on-track retribution like they do in NASCAR.
No, they do not. Bubba, you can't do that. Naughty boy. Don't do that.
Chase anyway. Elliott can't do that, but apparently NASCAR says, you know, that's not fine worthy.
They will never beat the allegations. Anyway, Canada, I think they had a shot to win that one. I think they genuinely had the pace to win, and I think Lando stayed out too long on that one. You know, there's been, I wouldn't go as far as to say own goals. They've been very busy at the European Championships. Well, I will say they have certainly been chances where I would go, if you execute perfectly, you probably win. And they've had a few of these now. And the way I see it, the way the field is right now, McLaren should be cashing in on the state of the field right now. They are the only team that are competitive and can get two cars on the podium right now. Because right now, Red Bull is just Max. Max is putting that team on his back. Max has not been bulletproof this year, but he's still consistently excellent. And that's all he needs to be right now. He can afford to give up wins here and there now. He should be getting very comfortable finishing in second, because if he does that for most of the season, he will win the world title anyway. There's no problem about that.
We talked about Mercedes.
Mercedes are back where they need to be. But they probably left it too late. Like they were too slow to get going to this point. They've probably coughed up too many rounds where they were finishing sixth and fifth. Like, and Ferrari, they've regressed to the mean. We're like, Ferrari do not understand their upgrade package. I mean, Carlos Sainz admitted after this race they've lost 2 months of development because they did this race in their Imola setup. They reverted back to their Imola car. That was 6 rounds ago. Like, they do not understand their development package. They've gone back to being the fourth best team again. It's a disaster for Marinello. Like,
it was all looking so good. Carlos Sainz was quashing the narratives. Charles Leclerc finally got his home race win, but what did it cost them in the end? So that just leaves McLaren, who have a great all-around car. They have two fantastic young drivers, but they're leaving too many opportunities on the table. They are relearning how to win like they did back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, parts of the 2000s, 2010s.
It's a lot
but they got to learn quicker because this is what Formula One requires of you.
Yeah, look, Lando is a fantastic driver. I think he's a borderline top three driver in Formula One now, alongside Charles and Max. You know, you could possibly throw Lewis in there, but the body of evidence, I mean, let me see this way. Hamilton just had a 25-point swing on George Russell, whose water system failed in his car in the middle period of that race and had to DNF the car. Russell's still ahead of him in the championship by a point, despite the 25-point swing Hamilton just took. Like, Russell has been the guy for Mercedes this year, but even he's made more critical errors in clutch scenarios this season. There's no getting around it. George has a pressure problem. Norris, I don't want to rag on the dude because there is no bigger critic of Lando Norris than Lando Norris, and he'll be the first person to admit when shit's hit the fan. He's got to stop fumbling. He's got to stop making these minor errors. I don't think this one was fully on him, but losing time behind the Mercedes in the first stint by losing track position to Max did not help. Yeah. I'll say that much. His pace in the rain wasn't good enough, and he missed his pit box in the pits on his final stop, and then had to butcher his soft tires to try and stay with Lewis. It didn't work. He butchered himself, and he lost second as a direct result of overdriving his car. So McLaren, who, in my opinion, missed out on a big chance to win with Oscar Piastri, because it was clear McLaren were hedging their bets in this race. They kept Piastri out a lap longer. That completely did not work. It took him out of the running for the win altogether. And I think a lot of people slept on the fact that the fastest man in the final stint of that race was Oscar Piastri. He was 6 seconds faster than Lewis's final stint, because the correct tyre to be on was a brand new set of mediums. McLaren had a set for Norris potentially, and Norris convinced him into taking new softs, and his indecisiveness probably cost him the win, or certainly at least a shot at it.
I almost thought it's just like, does every driver think that they want to be Sebastian Vettel, like being your own head strategist from inside the cockpit, because maybe you don't trust all the pit wall decisions 100%?
Well, Seb had good reason to back then, because Ferrari's strategic department back then was woeful. Do not get it twisted. But I do agree that Alex Brundle made this point, and I went back and listened to the race on F1 TV after the fact, and Brundle was right when he made this comment. When Max is on the intermediate stint, at no point does GP ask for Max's opinion on what tyre to be on. They've got the tyre deltas, they have the information, they made the call on the wall. Max trusts his team. He's never questioned a strategic call, from what I can remember, from Red Bull's pit wall. And it was a wonderful call at the end of the race, because it got Max a second place he probably didn't deserve on paper. Red Bull was all over the place. They're still struggling to get their tyres in their performance window when they need to be, and they took a second out of it. Like, for some reason, and I don't understand why, McLaren has 99 times more data and information than Lando Norris does in the car, and yet they keep giving Lando the final call on strategy. And it's abundantly clear to me that he's not that guy. He's not a race strategist, because every time they give Lando the final call of the decision, he's wrong. He was wrong in Canada. He was wrong here. He was wrong in Sochi 2021. This keeps happening. I don't know why McLaren are deferring to Lando on everything. Are they afraid of telling him no? I don't understand it.
Yeah. Stuff. I mean, Formula One on their YouTube channel uploaded basically 14 laps to change the race. It was basically this whole middle stint where the rain started to come down and nobody was sure what they wanted to do with the tires. But Hamilton just said, no, I want to stay on the inners. I don't want to come in for inners just yet. I want to stay out on the slicks. And as it turns out, that was another key decision as to how they ended up winning this race.
You're right, RJ. Your initial sentence was spot on. McLaren needs to learn how to win. And don't get me wrong, it has been the first time in the Zak Brown era that McLaren has got a car that can genuinely challenge for victories.
Now. Well, what about 2021? Well, if it exists, no exceptions.
Well, depends on who you ask again. But, you know, nobody thought McLaren was going to win in Monza in 2021. Let's be real here. Like, that's the one win they've had. But before that, you're looking back to what? 2012 was the last time?
2012, when Hamilton and Button were winning so much, but they could never have enough mechanical reliability underneath them to put together any sort of consistent results.
Yeah, different ballgame entirely, that. But this is the best McLaren has been in 12 years. This is a car and a team that can genuinely win races now.
Back to where they should be right now.
Yeah, and I say this, I admit I'm being harsh here, but you are in title contender status here now. You can't afford to make these kind of errors because, once again, like, I think McLaren could have 1-2'd this race, potentially. They could have had a 1-2 finish this race, and instead they ended up 3-4, I should say. That's a lot of points. In fact, I actually spoke to Alex Kananorkas, my colleague Autosport, about this, and he wrote an article about how many points he thinks McLaren have left on the table since Imola. He reckoned it was about 50. If it's 50 points, we're putting McLaren right in the wheelhouse of Red Bull. We think he had it at 12 points off once he factored in all the other potential positions of dropping Red Bull down and reshuffling the board. He had it at about 12 points. McLaren should be in contention for the Constructors' Championship right now.
Yeah.
And they're not.
Because Red Bull has hit the limit of sustainability. It was just like, who needs a second driver? We got Max Verstappen in the best car. Well, yeah, Max Verstappen, but I'm not sure if you have the best car anymore.
Yeah, and Max is not bulletproof. This is not last year where if Max gets a clean run, he's just going to win. That's not happening anymore. They're not the best qualifying car right now, and Max has never been the best qualifier in the first place. And this was a race where Red Bull at no point looked like they were the fastest car until the final 15 laps. But like I said, if Max can just bring home seconds and thirds, Hamilton winning is not going to concern Max at all because Hamilton is not a threat for the championship.
Hamilton is eighth in the standings. He's 145 points back.
It's a feel-good win and nothing more.
Yeah, and don't get it twisted, though. This is a huge, huge feel-good win. We've had enough
of course.
Hamilton's struggles over the years where now we are... The Hamilton success fatigue has worn off, it's fair to say.
Absolutely.
The dominant years of the mid to late 2010s, and now coming up to the end of his time at Mercedes and coming into he is in the sunset of his career, because while I think he could still be a success and drive at a high level past 40, is he going to want to do that for the longest time? Who knows? Who knows how long this Ferrari run is going to be when it comes up? So for him to get that win, that was really special. Again, we didn't think it would ever come again. And
I didn't.
I'd say cherish that win. So my partner's alarm goes off in the other room. Cherish the win. You never know if it's going to be the last time. You know, and I'm not just saying that because Ferrari looks a bit sketchy with the way the car's being developed. But like,
true.
Yeah, I mean, I remember it. Fernando Alonso had a very, very special win in 2012 in Valencia, and then 2013 in Spain. You think, well, you never think at the time that those days are going to end. Fernando Alonso has not won a race since, and right now he is being outperformed by Formula One's poster child for nepotism. And I can say that he's been consistently outperformed by Lance Stroll the last few weeks.
It's a weird time to be in F1 right now. We're like, it is a, there's a lot of anomalies in the field right now. Aston Martin, who have been pretty bad for the last three or four rounds, actually got both cars in the points comfortably, 7th and 8th. They had a really good day. I'm going to hit the cleanup topics in a bit of a different order. Nico Hülkenberg, back-to-back 6th place finishes in the last 2 weeks. What a run of form the Hulk is in right now. 16 points. Like, he scored more points in the last two races than Sergio Perez has scored in the last 6.
Should we also talk about the other point in that, that Sergio Perez has a 100-point-plus deficit to Max Verstappen? I mean, remember the lopsided top-team matchups, of course. But again, Red Bull no longer has the number one with the bullet-best car in the grid. And now Max Verstappen is now showing points of vulnerability, and that's when everybody's talking like, well, if they ever get to this point, that's why you need Sergio Perez to be running up close to the front. I'm not asking for Sergio Perez to go out there and compete for Max Verstappen for a title, because I think that's where a lot of the agitation came from last year. It's like, well, the only person that's going to give Verstappen a title challenge is his own teammate, and he's not giving us that. Now it's a point where it is a problem for Red Bull, and they can't just coast through it. And apparently there is a clause in this brand new extension that they just signed that they could basically just undo it.
Yeah, it turns out, this is according to my colleague John Noble, also Sport. Pardon me.
Bless you.
Thank you, man. At key points in the season, if Sergio Perez is more than 100 points behind Max Verstappen, they can cut him. Right there and then, they've put a performance clause in there, which, you know, and the way it's going right now, especially given that by sheer coincidence, Liam Lawson's got a filming day test with the RB20 coming up. And we've seen this team react before in similar circumstances. That's why we had Daniel Ricciardo back in last year at RB. The artists are now known as RB. It wouldn't be the first time Red Bull's gambled like this. And right now, if you think Perez is this bad and this is unsustainable, why not roll the dice on Liam Lawson at this point? Like, I wouldn't normally be the sort of person to endorse this kind of move because you're in a championship battle.
Yeah, because you have said, like, if Liam Lawson's getting promoted, they're crazy to promote him straight up to Red Bull. Like, that is putting crushing amount of weight on Lawson's shoulders. But Team Faenza did this last year. Nyck de Vries just wasn't getting it done for whatever reason. They dropped in Daniel Ricciardo with the hope that it's like, right, this is going to be a stopgap, and eventually Daniel Ricciardo is going to show his class and get that second Red Bull seat. And he's not performed up to that expectation, but Red Bull, for whatever reason, does not think Yuki Tsunoda is the guy because they still think of him as 2021 Yuki Tsunoda. That's the way he is in their minds, and they're not going to change. So then who's left? You can promote Liam Lawson straight up to Red Bull. And I love me some Liam Lawson. Do not get me wrong. I think he is overdue a full-time F1 chance. You think this would work?
It's a
don't trust Ricciardo, if you don't trust Tsunoda, and you're not getting Carlos Sainz Jr. back because his dad and Max's dad just don't get along for whatever reason.
I've seen crazier gambles work in this sport. Let's put it to you that way. I'm in the camp that, and I said this last year when Perez was struggling. He can get away with this for now because Max was winning almost everything that moved in 2023.
Yeah. All the talk about, you know, missing Q2 and the fastest car of the grid, Perez always somehow found a way to get back into the points. So, like, it mitigated damage. This weekend, he qualified bad and he didn't race good. It makes me personally sad as a long-term Sergio Perez fan that he's looking like he might be going out sad, but
he couldn't pass Kevin Magnussen on track, RJ. This is severe cause for concern.
Yeah.
This is, like, don't get me wrong, not, this one wasn't entirely on him. I mean, he was put in for intermediates far too early, almost like he was a guinea pig for Max in that scenario. But you don't get treated like a guinea pig if you're higher up the field and you've got some promise.
That's the problem. That's the flip side of it.
You know, and, like, I love Checo. I think I root for Checo. I'd like to see him do well. But at the same time, this is unacceptable for a top-tier team on any level, context, or nuance.
It's making me miss the struggles at McLaren in 2013.
Yeah, God.
At least you could make some arguments that Perez was outperforming Button in some categories, but not here.
No one's even saying he's got to finish second every week. Just get in the top five every weekend and you'll probably be all right. That would be enough to mitigate getting both McLarens up the order. You can't even be doing that right now. Right now,
can I throw out a suggestion?
Go for it.
Nico Hülkenberg to finish out the year at Red Bull. There's nothing that says that he can't go straight over to Audi right afterwards.
Why not? Why not? Why not buy out the rest of his Haas contract? Tell Ayuka Matsu what would it take to buy Hülkenberg out right now and say, give it to Hülkenberg for the rest of the year. Haas can put in Audi Behrmann immediately if they're that way inclined. Get a head start on him for the rest of the season. A
fat check from Toyota, who is definitely coming back to Formula One. The company that I think Toyota would be so much better than they were last time around if they committed to Formula One, but I will believe it when the press release is in front of my desk from the company that just had a board meeting and were deliberating whether to keep Akio Toyota on the board because he was spending too much time getting wrapped up in all of his race cars. And unless the rest of Toyota's board is thinking like, well, we want to get involved in race cars that aren't like rally, endurance racing, and all this other stuff. We want to go to Formula One. I don't believe that they're just going to suddenly pivot like that.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. But again, it's a viable option. Yeah, if you think Hülkenberg is a solid pair of hands and you think he can get you a car into the top five or six, that would probably be enough to cement you both titles if Max can keep bringing it home.
It would also game shark like the one missing like piece of fulfillment that the season hasn't given us is a
Hülkenberg podium. That would be nice.
Hülkenberg win if this ever happens. But
oh god,
I have no reason to think that this would like ever happen, but no. It's a suggestion that's
a fun idea.
It's a fun idea.
I mean, speaking of which, we kind of gave it away a little bit though, but it was the worst kept secret in F1 anyway. Audi Behrmann's been confirmed at Haas for 2025. Again, worst kept secret in F1. They've been eyeing this man up for almost a year now in various capacities. They finally announced it. It wasn't a coincidence. It was the British Grand Prix weekend they announced it. Yeah, Audi Behrmann confirmed, and there's not much to really say. The kid's a stud, and he's more than ready for this. Do not let 2024 F2 unseriousness fool you otherwise. The man is him. He's a fantastic talent, great prospect, and going to right now a very solid Haas team right now. So, yeah, I love this move. I love it for them. If the rumors are true that it might be Esteban Ocon alongside him. Ocon and Behrmann is a very solid team for Haas in 2025, if that's how it inevitably lines up.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, what's there to say about Behrmann? He's been highly touted since his days in Formula 4 and Formula Regional. And people forget, like, this Formula 2 season has been a disaster. Wasn't all that bad last year. Sit some points and very narrowly missed out on Rookie of the Year honors.
Was it four wins, including a double in Baku, and no one wins double races in F2 anymore because of the nature of the format? It's virtually impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Behrmann was doing that at 17. Like, yeah, The kid's a stud. Do not like for those of you who haven't been following F2 this year, it's been deeply unserious with this brand new car, because Prima, who are normally lights out and knowing how to set up one of these cars, has completely shit the bed this year. I mean, they were the last team on the grid to get a podium finish this year. The last team to get a
podium. Andrea Antonelli, the other most clouded, most hyped prospect in the field, just got his first sprint win of the season. He's still top 10 in points, so like a big run at the end of the season is not impossible.
Yeah, it's but we, again, everyone and their mother knows that Antonelli is better than what the setup is around him. It's not, I was going to say, it was actually just starting to affect his stock, because the rumors were coming out of the British Grand Prix was that Toto might not be so keen to put Antonelli in the Mercedes straight away at 18 next year. And maybe a loan to Williams would make more sense. And then he goes and wins his first sprint and dominates the field in the wet at Silverstone to do it. And everyone's like, oh, hang on.
Like, Mercedes now is back to winning races. Do you think they're now in a position where they can't gamble on someone like Antonelli to put him in straight away?
Well, how good do you think he is? Like, that's the question. If you think he really is him, then what? Then I don't think it changes the question.
Mercedes thought George Russell was good, and they still left him in Williams' layover for arguably a year or two too long in the eyes of many. So,
well, that's the thing. Yeah, like I said, they're generally like it, the whole deal with Antonelli has been weird with me, because I've always got the impression that Mercedes was a conservative team because George Russell was an S-tier prospect, and yet he still did 3 years at Williams, and Valtteri Bottas was starting to stick. They could have pulled the trigger on Russell earlier, but they chose not to.
It's a different Mercedes team now, obviously. Mm. They're not the dominant force. They cannot afford to just like let Valtteri Bottas be more marginal now. Like, they got someone to replace, but I'm thinking, like, Carlos Sainz came calling. Do you think they'd take Antonelli over Sainz?
It's a good question.
Although, now it's looking like Carlos Sainz Jr. is going back to Enstone.
Yeah, because Flavio Briatore was the first person in the room to say, hey, why aren't you trying to sign the best driver available if you've just lost Esteban Ocon? Apparently, that needed Flavio's input, apparently.
I'm sick and tired of this old, corrupt, scheming son of a bitch being the only person that can get Team Enstone right. You mean to tell me that there is nobody else in the Forlorn Paddock that could get this team right?
Well, to be fair, if they did, Renault's probably fired them by now. Yeah, why not at this point? But yeah, I mean, the way the silly season's rolling out, the way that, yeah, like, to answer your question from a minute ago, I'm not sure if I would take Antonelli over Carlos Sainz either. Carlos Sainz is still, I still think, is a damn good racing driver, no matter which way you slice it. Yes, he's like, if the worst thing you could say about him is that he's not quite as good as Charles Leclerc, you're still probably doing all right, quite frankly.
Oh, absolutely.
I know the scoreboard's not been the most flattering for Charles this year, but Carlos Sainz, even before he went to Ferrari, was a damn good driver at McLaren too. So why not? If you're if Mercedes want a safe pair of hands, fucking why not bring back why not bring Carlos Sainz in for a year, even if it's only for a year, and or 2 years even, and you can give Antonelli to James Vowles for 2 years and say, hey, you get 2 years of Antonelli. We might even take a little bit off the power unit fee for you in exchange. Everybody wins except Logan Sargeant. But you know, it's I don't see what the issue would be with that.
Congratulations to Logan Sargeant for no longer being the 21st best driver in a 20 driver championship.
11th.
Unfortunately, now that honor falls upon Valtteri Bottas.
Oof. Sauber are so cheeks. They are so bad this year. So bad. They had chances to score points early season. Then the pit stop error started reeling in. They've cured that problem, but then now they're just slow. And it actually pains me seeing them be this slow.
Yeah, Williams is back to tracks that are comfortable for them. RB's fast again. Haas doesn't stink anymore. It's tough. Oh, by the way, a new F1 movie trailer came out. The movie is called F1. It's not called Apex GP. It's not called Days of Wonder, which, honestly, huge missed opportunity given that it's another Jerry Bruckheimer film. It's basically Top Car. Top Gun with Car.
I mean, Joe Kaczynski's directing it, after all. I mean, what did you make of it? Because we all saw it. Let's be real here. They put it like they made it available as B-roll for everybody, so you could like you can just rip it and put it anywhere on the internet. So what do you make of it?
First reaction. I'm watching it like in real time right now.
Okay.
I think over the weekend, like seeing like roleplay accounts come up from the titular team. This series is just wild, and everybody buying into the bit is just like there are so many Sonny Hayes slander accounts on F1 social media right now. It's crazy.
It is crazy. I'll give you my quick opinion. It looks well shot. Like
the John Kaczynski, Jerry Bruckheimer production. They're giving this the Top Gun treatment, and like it's clear that this is a more like serious kind of effort at F1 movie than say Driven.
This is the first F1 movie we've really had in 60 years. Like
Grand Prix,
like,
John Frankenheimer.
Since Grand Prix. I'll give them this. It looks really well shot. The trailer was 90% action shots. And the action shots looked very good. The camera work, the cinematography looked superb. I'll give them that. I thought the one line of dialogue they dropped at the start when Brad Pitt says we've got to build a car for combat was clunky as fuck. It feels like they're dumbing down F1 for the mainstream audience, which I don't think you need to do. I think you could just say, if all these cars are fast on the streets, we need to be fast on the corners. That would have been fine. No one says we're building a car for combat. Like we're playing Wipeout and like Piranha's just got the plasma bolt. That's not how this works.
Yeah, the cinematography is like fantastic, and you know, I have a feeling sentency. I don't have any advanced copies. It's like when I saw the Rolex 24 portions of this, I'm thinking, God, how is the IMSA community going to take their series being used as the thing from which Sonny Hayes' character is saved from by coming back to F1?
Yeah, probably we all know sports car guys take F1 very well, generally speaking, right? Right?
Especially when it's bad.
Exactly.
Like, don't get me wrong, I like when it's good like this, but when it's bad, woof.
Yeah. And, like, this is about as much as I'm going to talk about the F1 movie on this show, because, generally speaking, fuck Brad Pitt. And I don't care who knows it on this show. It sucks that it took friend of the show, former co-host Hazel Southwell, unlocking her main account and telling the world, oh, have you guys all forgotten that Brad Pitt's a multiple alleged domestic violence abuser? And we're giving an F1, we're giving him the big F1 branded reach around for a 60-year-old who beats his children allegedly. And we're just completely okay with this.
Formula One doesn't
care.
Formula One speaking. Generally doesn't care. Like, if you're a big name and you're not so scandalized to the point where you can't be on public company anymore, generally speaking, they'll just let all that shit slide.
And at this point, and it was another one of my friends, Jade at Looking Spiffy, lovely, lovely person, give her a follow if you haven't already, who mentioned, I don't think the youth are campaigning as hard about this because Brad Pitt is 60 years old now. A lot of people have forgotten that. Brad Pitt is 60. He's not your Hollywood star. He's your dad's Hollywood star at this point.
That is crazy. Yeah, he was old enough to play the relatively young but still kind of old general manager in the film Moneyball.
Right. Yeah, it's shit's wild. Like, if Brad Pitt actually raced in Formula One today, he'd be the oldest driver ever by about 5 years, and that is just fucking wild to me.
Yeah, but it's not Brad Pitt. It's Sonny Hayes.
Yeah, And we're talking about a 60-year-old man being the headline figure in an F1 movie. So I don't really want to talk about it any more than that, because I don't want to give F1 a free pass for this bullshit. I said it before. I said it when he was being paraded around at COTA last year, and it was the same weekend after Dietrich Mateschwitz died. We absolutely do not have to hand it to these people. Just remember that going forward when we're talking about this movie, even though you've probably already got it on pre-order, you filthy, filthy people. But yeah, that's it's a decent trailer. Call it what I'll go as far as to say it's a decent looking trailer. And if you're into F1, you've probably already made your mind up and you're probably going to go see it. So, you know, enjoy and all that. Hope you don't feel too guilty on the way out. But F1 actually has a week off. Yes, a break after this fucking triple header. I'm exhausted, so I'm glad we're getting a week off, and then we're going to Hungary. I wonder if Lewis Hamilton will do it again and become the first person to win 9 times in a single country twice over, because he made history by doing that at Silverstone this week. He might be able to do it again in Hungary, because he's won there 8 times already.
Let's see. Hungary is as much Hamilton land as Silverstone is.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to happen, but like, I'm glad we got to see it at least one more time. What a fucking race for me to sleep through, because my cycle is all sorts of fucked up.
Yeah, we've all been there, man. Know that feeling. We'll be back a little bit later on with our IndyCar review of the Mid-Ohio 200. IndyCar's first ever hybrid race, and it went wet. That's about as far as I can give you on this one without spoiling it. But hey, at least Pato's back. That's nice.
Pato's right back.
Yeah, more on that in the next episode. But until then, we'll be back for F1 in the Hungarian Grand Prix in 2 weeks' time. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Get in there, Lewis.